To the fantastic new album from Dr. Lonnie Smith. The album's called Rise Up. That song is called A Matter of Pat. Now, for those of you who don't know Dr. Lonnie, I mean, I've been a fan for years and years, but some of you may find that you're not so familiar with him, because I don't think he's ever actually been to Australia. But he has been playing for 5 decades. He's recorded over 70 albums, and he's originally from Buffalo in New York, and he began his career back in the 60s. Well, he began playing organ, I think, in the late 50s, having played a few other instruments before. We might ask him about that. But one of his first bands was with George Benson, and he then went on to play with people like Lou Donaldson. And he's been described as a riddle wrapped in an enigma wrapped in a turban by the Jazz Times. And someone else called him the King of Nuance. He's also been called the Godfather of Organ Funk and the reigning old school Hammond B3 Maestro. I don't know what he will think of those titles. But anyway, can you hear me, Dr. Lonnie?
Sure. How are you, Tess?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yes, all the way from New York. Isn't technology wonderful?
Oh, it's beautiful. And it's even more beautiful when I saw you in person.
Well, it was one of the best nights of my life, I can tell you, because I've been a fan for so long, and it was just a fantastic night. I just was mesmerized by the music, I tell you. And I noticed that one of your critics says, when Dr. Lonnie plays an introduction, you feel anything could happen. And I was just, I was fascinated to watch you play. I just wondered, when you do sit down at the organ to play a set, do you have any idea of what you're going to do, or do you just totally make it up on the spot?
Normally when I go on the stage, I have no idea what the first tune is going to be, or I don't like to count out the tempo. I just start playing, I let it go.
Right. Have you always...
Whatever happens, happens.
Okay. Have you always been like that? Because, like, you started out your career playing with George Benson in a quartet. Presumably, when you played with him, you'd have had to have had some idea, wouldn't you, of what you were doing?
I didn't have any idea, but George, he knew. When we first started, actually, I had been playing maybe about a year. I had been playing with another group in Ohio called Sammy Bryant, and we used to play behind a lot of Motown groups during that time when they would come through, because they were new also.
Okay.
And so we would play behind, you know, Dionne Warwick, Gladys Knight, Impressions, you know, things like that. And that's when George and I met. And when George and I met, I remember he was with Jack McDuff. And what happened is that I sat in with them, and he said, let's get a group. So he came and got me, picked me up, and we went to his mom's house in a basement, and learned two songs, and we took off for New York.
Wow, that was brave,
wasn't it? From Pittsburgh. Yes, he's from Pittsburgh. And we went to New York. A friend of ours was playing Grant Green. And so Grant Green, Larry Young, and Candy Finch. And from then on, it was it. We got signed with Columbia Records right away.
Right. Well, that doesn't surprise me. But, I mean, when you're saying you played... Oh, I can hear police sirens there.
Oh,
that sounds
New
like
York.
New York, yes. you don't hear that.
Yeah, it wake you up.
Yeah. Now I've lost the thread of what I was saying. Oh, yeah, when you were saying you were playing Motown and stuff, now I know you don't read music. Didn't you find that was all fairly arranged, and was that a problem for you?
Oh, you betcha. Well, what happened is the one was really arranged was Dionne Warwick, because she was doing a lot of Burt Bacharach tunes, right? And I remember they would put the music on the organ, and it would, I'm serious, it would lean from one side, hanging over the organ to the other side. The sheet was that long.
Oh, God.
And what happened, I would know the song, I learned the song, you know, by ear, and play it that way, but it looked like I was reading, so it looked like I was doing what everybody else was doing.
All right, yeah.
It was something, because I had to fake it because I couldn't read.
Well, there's a few. I know that David Fathead Newman had a similar thing, didn't he? That was why he was called Fathead, I believe, because the teacher found the music upside down on his stand and realized he wasn't actually reading it. So it seems to be a fairly common thing among jazz musicians, doesn't it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, the majority of the musicians now, they read well. Maybe every now and then I might find a musician that doesn't read, but most of them that I play with me, they know music.
Yeah, well, these days, of course, most of them go through college, don't they? And you really have to you have to do both, really. You have to be able to improvise.
Should.
But
you
yeah, yeah. But it certainly hasn't. You know, to me, a lot of the most individual players are the people who don't read music, and you're certainly one of those. You know, you've got your own kind of individual style.
Well, I have to because what happens, it'll change constantly. You know, I remember we were in a studio. It was Fathead was there, and Lee Morgan and Melvin Sparks, and I forgot the drummer, Marion Booker, I think. So we were playing, and every time we would play, start off the head of the tune, see, that should be together. You should know that if you don't know anything else, is the head together, the beginning of the tune.
Of course, yeah.
And what happened, every time we would play it, I would play it different. And Lee says, well, which one you want us to play? I said, well, we'll play this one. And we'll start recording, and I would play it different. They said, you're playing it different. I say, well, we'll play this one then. And so they had to write it down. It had to be written because I would play it different all the time.
Yeah, I was reading an interview in Downbeat of Melvin Sparks. I think it was in Downbeat or one of those magazines where he was saying that he had to write it all out. You know, because obviously, as you say, if you don't know, I suppose it's a different thing if it's your music and you're leading the group. That's kind of a different thing, isn't it? So maybe that's why you choose mostly these days to lead your own group, and you're in the fortunate position that you can do that.
Right. It feels good.
Yeah.
It feels good because what I'm playing is what's in my heart, directly from my heart. And so therefore, I don't have time to write it. If I could write it out, it would be nice, but I would probably get bored with it.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that, yeah. Look, as I say, I think it makes for, you know, a much more individual player. I'm guessing, actually, most of the Hammond greats probably didn't read music either. Would I be correct on that?
Jimmy didn't read too well himself, right? Johnny Hammond, he read a little bit. Well, you're about right, most of them.
Yeah, yeah, but maybe some of the new breed, like Joey DeFrancesco.
The new one.
I could imagine, say, someone like him, Joey DeFrancesco, maybe does read. I don't know if I'm right on that, but, yeah. Anyway, I was just going to ask, I mean, where do you draw your inspiration from? You know, you obviously have just this incredible creativity in your playing. And I just wonder, what do you draw on? Do you listen to lots of other music, or is it just inside your head, you know, or what?
Well, I do listen to other music, but when I'm playing, I hear sometimes two or three things at one time. When I'm playing a song, sometimes, you know, you're playing and I have an idea, and there's another idea that comes up in your head at the same time. And so you just take the avenue that you think will get you there. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, but it's a lot of fun going after it.
Yeah, well, I mean, most of your tunes, you really build on your solos, which is what really appeals to me. You know, you can never tell where the tune is going to go. Like the guy said, you know, when you sit down at the keyboard, you feel anything could happen. But, of course...
Yeah, they don't either. They do not either. We were doing a talk show one day and on the ship, and, you know, they had the stars, the question and answer. People would ask us questions. And they were asking something similar, and I told them. And Red Holloway said, it was Flash Thompson. You remember the Pink Panther?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he was the one that was saxophone player, and that he was saying, he said, well, they better be great musicians because, you know, to keep up like that, you know.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Yeah, right.
And there's some great musicians out there.
Hmm?
There's some great musicians out there.
Yeah. I just wondered, who do you have, like, a favorite Hammond player? A living one? Or?
Hammond player?
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy Smith was my favorite.
Right, yeah.
Jimmy Smith was my favorite.
No
why?
Relation.
Because he had all the things that I liked, feeling, taste. He had all the touch, you know. I liked Wild Davis, Milt Butner. I like the old timers better.
Right,
you know.
Right, yeah.
The
That's
younger guys are nice, but it's a certain feel that I like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I mean, look, my very first record was, would you believe, Booker T and the MGs, which I bought in 1962.
Oh, yeah, I played opposite him years ago, many years ago. I'll never forget it. We were in Columbus, Ohio, and we were doing a concert opposite each other. Yeah. And I remember that. And I played, and then he came up and played. He said, ladies and gentlemen, don't expect me to do that, but I'm going to play, and we're going to have fun, you know.
Yeah, well, he's a very different style to you, isn't he? More rhythm and blues. But that was sort of my introduction to the organ.
It was good.
And he, you know, he's...
That was a big hit. Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, I have the album and the EP and the single.
No, you do not. No, you do not.
All on vinyl.
You have it now?
I do.
You have it now?
I do. Yeah, it came all the way from London to Australia with me. So.
Well, you know what you might have to do?
What?
You might have to make me a copy of CD or DVD or whatever you got, or cassette or something.
Oh,
and
wow.
Next time you see me, you give it to me.
Okay. Yeah, well, maybe a birthday present.
I would love to have that.
Right.
That would be nice.
Now, I must just tell everybody that you're listening to Triple B, and this is Tess, and I'm talking to Dr. Lonnie Smith, the greatest Hammond organ player in the world. We're just going to hear a little snatch now of his album Jungle Soul, and we're going to hear, I love this track, Jungle Soul. It's got the real jungle feel, I reckon. So we'll just hear a little bit of this, Dr. Lonnie, and we'll come back and talk some more.
Sure.
Jungle Soul, that's the title track from Dr. Lonnie Smith's album, which came out 2004, I think that one, or was it, 2006, it was Too Damn Hot that came out in 2004. Anyway, we'll fade that down a little bit. Are you still there, Dr. Lonnie?
Sure, I'm here.
Oh, that's good. yeah, well, it seems, I'm just wondering, you've done so many albums, and most of them seem to have like a theme, you know, or a lot of the more recent ones do. Do you have a favorite album?
Not really.
Is it always
not like, really?
Is it always like the last one you recorded, maybe?
You betcha. Just like an actor. They say it's the one that's recently done.
Right, right. Well, going back, of course, you've recorded more than 70 albums. You've also appeared on a lot of other people's albums as well, haven't you? And
sure.
A lot of different lineups. Just wondering, do you have like a favourite lineup out of all the people you've played with? Or because, you know, you seem to have very close associations with a lot of saxophone players like Ronnie Cuba and David Fathead Newman, Lou Donaldson. And, of course, you played with George Benson. Do you have a favourite lineup, or, you know, do you just enjoy playing with all of them?
I enjoy playing with all of them. You know, the thing about it, the people that I've played with, we have such a close connection. It's like the moment that we see each other or play with each other, it's like we never been away from each other at any time. When we start playing, it's like it's connection right away. We have a thing like that because we have such a bond between us, you know. Because Lou, when George and I were together, we recorded with Lou the Alligator Boogaloo, and that was a big hit. That's how I got with the Blue Note Records. By playing on Lou's record, Lou Donaldson, and we're like a family. It's such a close knit. So as soon as we hit the first note, it was a connection. And same with David, and you can't believe how close and how wonderful it feels when we play together.
Yeah, so even when you reconnect with these people, perhaps you haven't played with them for a few years, you still feel that close connection.
You can't beat that. You know, we don't have to say anything to each other, just play.
Right.
You know, we speak through that, and I can't even explain it to you how I feel right now, just by you mentioning it, it's a great feeling.
The brotherhood of music, really. You know, as you say, it is that close bond, and especially I think when you played a few times, and perhaps when you were younger as well. It's just, I guess you all grew up with the same influences, and perhaps you've gone in slightly different directions, but you still understand each other musically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's it. You said it.
Yeah.
That's what it is. We understand each other because we know that era, and we know. If I do something different or new now with them, they will understand it because they're from that era, which, you know, music, it, you know, you think sometime, sure, I play this and I might play that and I might play outside sometime and I might play inside sometime. But it has to do with feel.
Yeah. I think, though, I think where you're perhaps a bit different to some of these other guys, though, is that you've definitely pushed the boundaries of the music, and you've actually interpreted a lot of pop tunes. I mean, on your latest album, you've got a Beatles tune, you've done, you know, the Hendrix tributes, the Boogaloo to Beck. You don't see a lot of these other jazz guys pushing the boundaries quite that much, do you? I just wonder what they think you doing that sort of music.
Oh, they love it.
Yeah.
I'm quite sure they love it because it's something that they respect also, because they know that if I want to play straight tunes all the time, I can.
Yeah.
But plus, you know, I've done it for many years, so I can do that. I'm always reaching for something new.
Yeah, which is what makes it interesting, I think, you know, because, as I say, I mean, I'm one of these people as well. I have very broad tastes in music, and, I mean, I will include, you know, I saw Jimi Hendrix when he came to London, you know, in the 60s, and...
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought he was really great and, you know, had a lot of great tunes. And so I was quite thrilled when I discovered those Hendrix albums of yours, because a lot of jazz people, that would be kind of off limits, I think, Hendrix.
Right.
They'd just say, oh, he's a rock guy, you know, we don't want... The interesting thing is, though, that Miles, of course, was a big Hendrix fan, wasn't he?
Sure,
so
exactly.
So some people maybe appreciate his skills, but...
That's not easy to do. Those things, we're all supposed to be one big family, and we should not snub someone else because they play funk or rock or jazz or, you know, but to play, take for instance, if I'm playing Giant Steps, sure, some organists cannot play that. So it's okay to me because they can play what they play well, and I respect that.
Yeah.
And they have to respect that too, you know, if I'm playing something else. You see, because when I play music, it's coming straight from the heart, from my soul, from deep down inside of me. It's like a burning electricity. It goes from my foot all the way up to the top of my head.
Right.
And those are the things that I feel when I'm playing. I have gotten lost, where I've gotten blind, I couldn't see. I had to go to the hospital one time. I get so deep emotionally into playing this music, so... Touching by touching people, that means everything. Bringing the world closer together.
And as you said, I think, you know, because of the fact you do push the boundaries of the music, you've drawn in younger fans who perhaps would dismiss jazz as kind of older people's music.
Yes.
But then when they hear you playing Beck and people like that, that draws them in, doesn't it, as well?
Sure. And the thing about it, when I'm playing that, I'm really thinking in terms of the music feeling good.
Yeah.
And it feels good to me, then I'll play it.
Yeah.
It's like getting a great piece of work. If you're acting and you got it, you say, oh, this feels good. I'll read it. And it feels good. I think I will do this. You know, it's not to. I don't think about making a hit or anything. It feels good. It sounds good, and it feels good to me.
Yeah, I understand that. When you're playing live less these days, I know. Do you still play a lot? Like when you're not gigging, perhaps during winter. Do you still play a lot when you're, you know, at home or?
I always try to touch that keyboard.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, always try to. It's a part of me.
Yeah.
It's it will snatch me over if I didn't. It will reach out and grab me.
Yeah, right. And what do you listen to? I mean, if you're at home, I mean. What do you actually choose to listen to yourself? Do you listen to all kinds of stuff?
I listen to all types of music. But, you know, like if you get in my car, though, if I'm riding somewhere, sometimes I'll put on classic music, classical.
Okay.
You know.
Who do you... have you ever thought of, you know, interpreting some classical music?
Or yes, I have thought about it. I have. I really have, believe it or not. Many years ago, I've thought about it. As a matter of fact, I was talking to, Betty Carter, and I was telling her I'd like to do something like that. And I just haven't done it yet, but it's still in my head.
Yeah, it might be one of the few styles of music that you haven't actually interpreted as yet. Now, let's get to your latest album. Now, an interesting thing about this album is that you have Jo Laurie on one track. Now, she's an Adelaide girl. Adelaide's where I'm talking to you from now, just outside Adelaide, and I can remember her when she was at music college here, so I thought that was a
wow.
coincidence, her being on that album.
Yeah. And
I just wondered, how did you connect with her?
Well, you know that what happened was I used just a little percussion on that, and he brought her along, and she was in the studio, so I had done about, I don't know how many tracks on And the World Weeps. And there was one voice that she did on there. But I had done, I don't know how many voices on there. I wanted a choir, so
right.
What happened?
Are you singing along on that as well? Because you
sing
part of it, don't you?
No, I'm doing practically all the voices on there.
Yeah, right.
I'm doing the bass, the baritone, the tenor, and I'm doing some of the high parts. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, sound like a woman up in the high parts. I was doing a lot of the high parts. So I did each track maybe 4 or 5 times each.
Okay.
So it was something. So it wasn't, you know, because you can loop a voice in a studio. That means that technically I can do it one time, and they can just do it several times, you know, electronically, you know.
Mm.
But they didn't. I had to do them each, and it's hard because, like we were talking about earlier, it was hard because I didn't remember how did I phrase that.
Ah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
you said da 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 da, so every time I would do it, I had to say da da instead of da da. You see?
Right.
So I said, "Oh boy, this is rough." So that was very difficult for me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And on this new album, you've got that's your first time you've worked with Donald Harrison, is it?
No.
Ah.
On the album, sure, but we have worked together.
Okay, yeah.
And we hit it off the same way. We just hit it off, and when we get up there to play, we just enjoy each other.
Yeah, sounds like you've played together for years. You'd actually, you don't have alto sax quite so often as, you know, usually you have tenor, I think, on most of the albums
yeah,
I've heard.
Exactly.
So that's
exactly.
given it a slightly different sound, hasn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. But again, on this new album, you know, you've got this Beatles song, Come Together, which has given me an idea that I'm going to do a whole show one day of jazzed up versions of the Beatles. I'm collecting them at the moment. I've got one by Booker T, actually, Day Tripper, which is quite a cool track. So I thought that just gave me the idea. I thought I'm going to collect them now. But
That's great.
And you've also got the Eurythmics, Sweet Dreams, a nice version
Love
of that
song.
As well. Yeah, yeah. So it's
Lennox, right?
Yeah, Annie Lennox, yeah. So it's a nice mixture, really. So we're going to go out in a minute. We're going to have to sign off Dr. Lonnie in a minute, and we're going to hear, I think, Come Together, since I've mentioned it. But just to tell us, what do you have, what are your plans now? Do you have once you finish this album, do you relax for a little bit, or do you immediately start thinking about your next project?
Believe it or not, I have things in my mind from many years ago, and there's a couple of tunes I didn't want to do, but I just haven't done it. So I have something in mind here. I think you'll love it.
Mm. Okay. So
I can't wait to go in. As a matter of fact, thanks for reminding me. I'm going to call the record company now, and as soon as I get off, and suggest that I go in.
Okay. Oh, well, that's exciting. Yeah. So that's great. It's great that you still have that enthusiasm, you know, after doing it for so long.
Oh, yeah.
And still come up with the ideas and you're still inspired. So, you know, that's really fantastic, I reckon. Whereas a lot of jazz musicians, just by your age, are just sitting on their laurels playing, you know, the same stuff, the same standards or whatever. So... I think it's great that, you know, you're really seeking new musical experiences all the time.
No, thanks.
Anyway, I guess we better wrap it up. So we're going to go out with Come Together from the new album Rise Up. And I have to say it's been a pleasure talking to you, Dr. Lonnie. And I've been recording this, so hopefully I can give you a copy of it when I next see you.
Sure. I hope I see you soon. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Tess.
Oh, well, thanks very much. Okay, let's go out. And good luck with the new album, whatever it may be.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, we'll go out with Come Together. Oh, it doesn't seem to want to play. Okay, here we go.
Thank you.